If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Medicine in America, hosted by Anthony Manson and Todd Harrington, shares the stories of physicians, other healthcare professionals, and industry leaders who are changing the way we deliver care. There's an episode that you should check out called Primary Care Reimagined with Subscription-Based Preventative Care Model. It's an inspiring call for a paradigm shift in primary care. All of their episodes highlight innovative ideas at the forefront of the movement to transform our healthcare system. Check out Medicine in America on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Highway to Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. This is episode 97 of the podcast. If you're a new listener, I want to welcome you. Highway to Health is your place for trusted health guidance and support. Whether you're looking to improve your health or just seeking ways to stay well, we're here for you. This growing community is on a mission to improve our state of being and our experience together on the planet. And if you love the thoughtful and informative content you get here, consider becoming a health amplifier today by joining this community over at patreon.com/highwaytohealth. Or you can also find it in the show notes here. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can help us provide free resource to anyone looking to improve their health and quality of life. So excited to share this conversation today with my family's dermatologist here in Minneapolis, Dr. Elise Schuer. I have to give my wife credit for researching and finding her. She's been a real gem and helped us out with a lot. And I'm a big believer in having a team of the smartest and most thoughtful care providers you can find when it comes to your health. And in many ways, this podcast was created out of my team and my connections and the health professionals that I collaborate with regularly. And as this podcast has grown, I've been connected now to people internationally. But even with these guests, I choose them because of specific qualities that I see in them and their experience and dedication to care. And I had to do a few visits with Elise this past spring to take care of a stubborn plantar's wart on the bottom of my foot, second one I've had in my life. And this gave me a chance to get to know her a little bit better. And being the curious sort that I am, I still had a lot of questions for her about skincare. I also just turned 50 this past year and starting to show the signs, the obvious signs. And with my face being more regularly on video on YouTube, I wanted to learn a few more anti-aging tips as well. And as well as some general skincare basics. And she was gracious enough to take some time out of her busy schedule to have this conversation with me. No video for this one. It's the first episode, though, that I've done in person since the beginning of the pandemic. And it was lovely to spend time with her and pick her brain. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Elise Schuer. You know, I did a little research just try to get some background on you.
Okay, totally fine.
And I found that you were you from the East Coast or did you just do your schooling out there?
I did my schooling out there. I'm actually from New Mexico. Which
where in New Mexico?
Sounds weird. Santa Fe.
I love Santa Fe.
I do too. Yeah, my dad grew up there and I did, but I definitely wanted to leave for college. But it's an amazing place; it's beautiful.
So you were in Virginia, right, for undergrad, mm-hmm. and then in the Bronx or something.
In the Bronx for med school, yeah. I was definitely out of my element in both places.
Is that right?
But it was good for me. It was really good for me.
My wife lived in the Bronx in Riverdale, which is like way.
I know Riverdale.
You know Riverdale.
Yeah.
Which is almost kind of like part of Manhattan compared to where you were.
I agree. I was in the North Bronx, so it was
right.
Safer than the South Bronx, but we did a lot of rotations and stuff in different hospitals throughout the Bronx and a couple in Manhattan too. So okay. it was good training for sure.
So how did you land in dermatology as your field?
Very randomly. I had actually applied to and matched in internal medicine. This was March of my last year of medical school when the big match goes through. I didn't even think about dermatology, but I had a couple of rotations left to do and it was kind of the end of the year. And I was like, oh, dermatology will be easy. You know, 9 to 5, no overnights, whatever. So I did the rotation and I absolutely fell in love with it. It was super fun. And I had met a resident there at Einstein that had switched residency programs during her intern year to go into dermatology. And I just kind of thought about it in the back of my head, and I started my intern year here in Minnesota, and it just kept lingering in the back of my head. Like, I really think I want to do that. It was so fun. So I switched residency programs. So I had to reapply, re-interview, get old recommendation letters, like all sorts of silly things. But that's how I landed in it. Like, very fortuitously, I could have easily done ophthalmology that month or radiology or some other sort of easier rotation. And but I just loved it.
So. I feel like the one thing that, I mean, just... I also ended up in a career I didn't plan on because I was an English major.
Okay. Yeah, I read that about you.
Once I started getting into doing body work, I think I was just interested in like the structure as a whole, and then if something gets out of balance, what are those reasons for it? And so the nervous system became like my thing. But the thing about skin is, and because I do manual therapy and I like, you can pick up a lot of information about what's going on with someone's skin. I
mean,
When I'm doing like any sort of massage work or something, you can tell by like the hydration levels with a person, you know, just through their skin. And so sometimes when they're sort of stuck in this chronic phase, I'll start, you know, really sort of pushing them on that to track it and make sure that they're, and sometimes like that actually resolves things.
That's awesome.
So yeah. I'm sure this is water is something that you have to.
We talk about water a lot. Yeah, patients are like, oh, I drink, you know, 10 glasses of water a day and my skin is still dry. I'm like, well, you pee out what you don't absorb.
Right.
You have to kind of
apply. Or how much coffee do you drink?
Correct. Yeah, you have to apply it from the outside in. It's not just about drinking water. So yeah, but it's a hot topic of a conversation for sure.
Yeah. What did you, was there anything specific with skin that you got interested in right away? I know you do surgery. And
yeah,
you do...
we do everything. It was really the weird stuff. And in the Bronx, especially, and similarly at HCMC here, there's a lot of weird infectious disease and like just random things. And I really liked sort of being the only one that knew about them. Like, you know, other physicians would be like referring rashes to us or whatever. And it's kind of fun to be the doctor's doctor in that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, patients walk in and they're like, I have this really weird thing. And I'm like, oh, I know what that is. And it's just cool.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't the surgery. It wasn't the cosmetics. And I do all of that stuff and I love it.
Yeah.
But the thing that drew me to it was just the totally bizarre stuff that was out there that I got to see and do.
Yeah. So I didn't see, and I never heard of Albert Einstein School for, what is it?
So Albert Einstein College of Medicine.
College of Medicine.
It's part of Yeshiva University. And it's at the time it was one of the top 25 med schools in the country. I don't know what its rank is at the moment. So it was a lot of Jewish medical students, definitely some that weren't. I was one of them. It was great. It was a really great education.
When was it founded? Do you know?
Oh, that is a good question. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I imagine it's been there for some time.
I think it's been around the block for a while, yeah.
But there are a lot of schools like that in New York that I find out about later on that are like super well-known,
smallish. It wasn't really on my radar. And then when I was in Virginia, it was very southern there. And I was like, I think I need to go to the northern part of the East Coast and see what that's like. And I wanted to be in New York. So, you know, you do your research on the medical schools in New York and it popped up. And when I interviewed there, I was scared to death to go. I had never, I've really never even been to New York, let alone the Bronx.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And, but anyway, I got in and it was great.
Yeah. I mean, I was drawn there. I lived there for 13 years, but more to Brooklyn and partly because I just liked these little neighborhood communities.
Okay.
And I had some friends out there. And I was 30 when I went, so I kind of like jumped from everything that I had already started here, which was a little difficult. I already started a private practice, I had to start over again.
Okay.
And then a year after I got there, 9/11 happened. But in some ways, there was some of that stuff really like solidified who some of the work I ended up getting involved with after that too was like, I became sort of an important person in that specific community that I was in.
Okay.
And then, you know, there's a lot of these little communities, and then eventually everyone hears about you.
Yeah, so it's amazing.
You can get busy very fast and then be a little overwhelmed.
Okay.
It's a little, here I feel like it's a little easier to manage here.
It is. There's a lot less background noise.
Yeah.
For sure. And just life in general is a little easier.
how long have you had Market Street Dermatology?
So we opened in November of 2013, so almost 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it went by really quickly.
Did you work for somebody else out of residency then?
Yes, out of residency, I worked for a bigger group practice in the eastern suburbs, dermatology consultants. It was actually my first job after residency.
Yeah.
It was great. I was there for about 10 years. And one of my colleagues who was working at a different office for the same company and I are actually neighbors or relative neighbors, and we just started talking about starting our own little personalized practice on this side of the river, and then it came true. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you and I have something similar in that we treat a lot of sort of age, you know, as far as population is concerned, because I work with everyone from newborns to, and a lot of times I see a lot of you know, stuff pop up, sometimes with newborns, sometimes with kids. I like to have like a good referral network, so you are on my referral network now.
Absolutely. We will see 0 to 100 is what I say, and probably 150 now, you know.
But it's nice because sometimes when you're working with these different, you know, family members, you know, I'll be working with, you know, a baby and grandmother at the same time and stuff.
I love that.
It makes me really happy
to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I think there's something like an instinct that you develop from working with a whole family too. Like you kind of get a sense of the ecosystem, and you know, probably there's some dietary things or some stress management things or whatever that you can help them with, because you sort of see a trend, you know, with people. And sometimes I work with extended family members of theirs too, and you kind of see it in the culture a little bit.
That's amazing. And it's really interesting to watch the kids grow up. And I mean, I can't believe I've been practiced long enough to watch kids grow up and have their own kids. It's totally weird to me.
I know.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. So what's your favorite thing to work with?
So my favorite thing to treat, this is going to sound a little silly, but my favorite thing to treat is acne.
Yeah.
It's a game changer for people.
My son has come to see you for this, by the way.
Okay, good.
He's getting ready to start college, but I think he came to see you a couple years ago. And his skin looks great, by the way. So,
And
it was a couple different rounds, and some of it was like him being, you know, better about actually self care and self maintenance stuff.
Totally. It's very hard to treat people that aren't motivated. Yeah. You know, a lot of parents will drag their kids in, so to speak.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the kids are motivated to, and it's not just kids that get acne. Obviously, it's adults as well.
Right.
But I love treating it. People are so happy when their skin looks good and they feel good. It's sort of, you know, if you look good, you feel good. And I actually think that's very true.
Yeah.
Or if you think you look good, you feel good.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I struggled with kind of acne issues from in sports a lot. And I'm sure I picked up something, or, you know, it's hard to say, but I didn't end up really dealing with it until my 20s, which was like, oh my God, why didn't I do this earlier? Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people do, but tell me about why we get kind of stuck in those cycles and what you do to treat it.
You know, I think a lot of people believe that acne is one of those things that everybody gets and you get over it. And you know, you just have to go through that phase in your life and then you're done and life goes on.
Yeah.
It's not true, but you know, I would say that a lot of mentality is that, oh, you know, it's not that bad. You'll get over this by the time you go to college and that will, you know, that's it. And, it's just not true. And the reason that we treat it really is to prevent scarring, and to prevent kids from remembering in adulthood that they had, you know, acne in their childhood. And it can be really traumatic for some people too.
Oh, totally.
Really. And like, you know, boys don't want to take off their shirts when they're playing basketball or they don't want to wear a swimsuit. The makeup, the hats, people work very hard to hide it, and it's all consuming sometimes.
So what do you usually suggest? Are there like safer or more natural methods, or?
I mean, it really runs the gamut, and it sort of depends on what kind of acne the patient has. Some people will come in and, you know, they'll have, I mean, some kids have like 2 pimples and they're wigging out about it. And other people have horrible cystic acne that come in for a different reason. I'm like, hey, do you want to talk about your acne?
Yeah.
You know, so it really depends on the type of acne that they have. It also depends, you know, if it's a child parent, what the parent is comfortable with. I think a lot of parents or older, you know, parents are, again, think kids are get over it. So why give them a systemic medication or why right. give them something, you know, that has side effects if, you know, if they're just going to get over this anyway.
Right.
So as far as all natural products, I mean, I don't know that a lot of people come in having tried a lot of things, essential oils, other things, but generally they sort of walk in the door after they've tried.
They've tried everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a limited, you know, it's an interesting population. It's kind of like when we see warts, like I only see the ones where the over-the-counter stuff doesn't work. Because
right.
if it did work, they wouldn't be in my office, that kind of thing.
And I came to see you for this. So.
I really didn't. Okay, I didn't mean to.
but it's the second time I've had a planter's wart. And they're just like, it wasn't that bad, luckily. But I mean, It wasn't going away, and I had one when I was younger that all the same thing. Like I think I probably dealt with it when I dealt with my back knee or whatever. But it just like I don't know why it would, you know, take me so long to come do that, and it's not really that bad.
It's because it's especially with warts, you don't even feel them sometimes.
Yeah,
you don't even realize you have them.
Yeah,
so.
And I think the other thing is there are some people who I hear this because I'm working with people without many clothes on a lot of times. And so they have certain things that they're really self-conscious about, and you don't realize it. And sometimes it's like a planter's wart or something, you know, and yet they haven't even thought of, or they can't get their head around like where to start, you know, looking for treatment and stuff. So
sure. Absolutely. When I do skin checks and things, I mean, similar, people need to get totally undressed and, I'm explaining why I'm looking between their toes. And, you know, they're like, right. they're like, oh my God, I didn't get a pedicure. Like, I don't really care. I don't care. I just want to make sure
you don't understand
healthy.
How many feet I see a day.
Yeah, exactly. I used to work at the VA. It's fine. I can handle any kind of foot.
Yeah.
Anyways, you know, things like that. I agree.
Do you ever have something that you can sort of diagnose through the skin, or do you have a network of people if you see something where you think there may be something, you know, more systemic going on?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of skin disease that indicates some kind of internal problem, whether like psoriasis, for example, can be associated with obesity, diabetes, alcohol use.
Right.
I mean, those things. Yeah. I mean, there's a million things, hair loss and thyroid disease.
Yeah.
I mean, just to name a couple off the top of my head, but we do a lot of work, not just externally, but sort of what that lends to as far as an internal problem potentially.
So do you work with someone then who's like, say, like working with endocrine system issues?
It really depends. You know, for psoriasis, I feel like I can counsel them on weight loss and goals for treatment. And, you know, a lot of patients don't know that, God, if I lost 10 pounds, I'd probably look and feel a lot better.
Right.
If somebody has a thyroid issue or, you know, some kind of hormonal imbalance, I'll generally refer back to their primary physicians or to endocrine or to wherever we need to.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I, you know, the one thing I get a lot of referrals for autonomic, you know, nervous system related things. And I see a lot of times people will have a lot of chronic pain issues, but they'll also have psoriasis and eczema and all these other things. And I feel like there's a part of my work that, you know, surprisingly, or a, you know, a histamine issue or something that helps to like settle the system. And then as that happens, a lot of times these skin things start to clear up too. And they're always a little bit surprised.
Yeah.
And so my side of this is that I start working with them on like stress management strategies and, and you know, sometimes they haven't been to a dermatologist yet. So
if you have any stress management strategies to lend my way, I would be more than happy. You know, patients ask a lot, well, is this from stress?
Right.
And I'm like, well, generally it's not from stress, but stress makes everything worse.
Right.
You know, it bumps up your cortisol levels.
Right.
I mean, it just, but it's really hard to avoid it.
And I try to teach just a little bit from that level. Like if you are in more of that fight or flight or freeze mode, that's also bringing up all that side of your endocrine system that is, you know, basically putting out fires, and, you know, inflammation is part of that.
Yeah.
Cortisol is part of that. Adrenaline, so your adrenals get really tapped. So that's the stuff that I think that if I'm able to work with someone, and sometimes it's just like a, you know, a few sessions, they just kind of, they sleep better. I mean, it's another one of those things. So then they can heal.
Sure.
And sometimes they're just like, they can't focus anymore. If once those things start to, you know, get in line, then a lot of times they can like focus on their diet. They can they feel sure. You know, enough energy to exercise, and it starts to kind of snowball
in
the positive direction too. Yeah,
absolutely, I agree.
Is there anything this time of year, now that we're kind of coming into the summer, that that you start talking about with people? I mean,
some things are funny. Like, people start to notice their spider veins on their legs, for example. They're I'm going to be getting in a swimsuit, and I'm like, well, we can't treat those right now because they look terrible for like about a month after you treat them. So that's something that we do in the fall and the winter.
Right.
There's skin conditions like melasma, where you get extra pigmentation in the skin from sun exposure. A lot of the treatments kind of need to be done in the winter, and you have to educate people about sun protection in the summer. So those are two things that come up a lot, I would say.
Are there certain people or certain populations that have more trouble with melasma?
Certainly more women than men.
Okay.
Although I do see men with melasma too. Darker skin types, it tends to be a little bit more prominent in appearance, but I don't know that it's necessarily of higher incidence in that population.
Okay.
It might be. I feel like it runs the gamut, at least in my own limited experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in terms of sun exposure, is there anything that you coach as far as how to protect or...
For melasma patients?
Or just for anybody, but you can... especially for them.
Yeah. I mean, melasma... Well, I'll start with just general population. I mean, patients ask all the time, what SPF should I use, et cetera. What I usually say is, whatever you'll use, I like. But if you use it, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
But I recommend SPF of 30 or higher.
Yeah.
It should say that it's broad spectrum, meaning it provides protection against UVA and UVB rays.
Yeah.
And that it's water resistant. Those are sort of the three features I'm looking for.
And how long is that stuff good for? Like, I feel like I run into this every spring.
Yeah,
is this
question.
Still good?
Yeah. So the FDA is not allowed to mark, or people are not allowed to market a sunscreen without FDA approval if it doesn't last for 3 years. So it should be a 3-year thing. That being said, if there's an expiration date on the bottle, and sometimes there's no expiration date. So if you bought it a year ago and there's no expiration date, totally feel free to use it. If there's an expiration date, toss it.
Yeah.
But it really can't get approved for use unless it can last about 3 years
right?
in the bottle.
Okay.
Yeah. So I used to teach people it was only, it's good for a year, but I realize that's not true.
Yeah.
Throw it out if you're in doubt is what I would say.
And the benefits of, say, vitamin D, that people always feel like they don't want to use the sunscreen because of that. Is there a safe period of time to go without sunscreen, or what's your feeling?
There really isn't. I mean, the vitamin D that you get from sun exposure is really inconsistent. The more sun you get doesn't mean you make more vitamin D, and you can get vitamin D through other sources.
Yeah.
We know sun is a carcinogen.
Yeah.
So to me, I would rather drink some fortified orange juice, eat some fish, and wear sunscreen. Then try to get my vitamin D through the sun. So there really isn't a period of time where you want to be in the sun without sunscreen in a perfect dermatology world.
Right. And I think when you did my check, I'm trying to think, there was something I said to you about, because I saw a lot of sun when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I did landscaping work and I was just always outside. And I think you said something about, like, the damage that's been done has really already been done.
Correct.
So
can't do anything about that.
So, but you can protect
the DNA damage going forward.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. By sun protection, skin checks, self-exams. I mean, the sun protection part, though, is the real part that helps prevent that DNA damage that's going to change your cells into cells that divide abnormally, causing cancer.
And is your skin better at protecting that from damage when you're younger? Does it break down?
It doesn't change it really depends on your skin type as far as if you're better able to protect yourself from that damage.
Yeah.
But anytime you change the color of your skin, whether it's a tan or a burn, you're damaging your DNA.
Yeah.
So it doesn't improve with time. It really doesn't. In fact, I would guess it gets worse with time just because our cells aren't as good at doing what they did when they were younger in many ways.
So how often do you suggest people do skin checks then?
It really depends on your risk factors and your history. It's not like, you know, we have recommendations for mammograms, you know, starting at age 40 or 35, colonoscopies every year or every 5 years, 10 years. There really isn't a guideline for that for skin exams. If you have over 50 moles, you're at higher risk, come in. If you've had a history of skin cancer, depending on the type, I'm going to want to see you every year.
Yeah.
If you come in and you have a pretty normal exam and you don't have a lot of moles, I can, you know, you could probably wait a couple of years. So it really depends on your skin type and what your risk factors are and what your history is.
Right.
And your family history too. Family history of melanoma increases your propensity for getting that skin cancer.
Does elevation have any factor on that?
Elevation, the UV rays are stronger at higher elevation, so you will burn more easily.
Okay.
But that's about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so with basic skincare, are there different kinds of SPFs that you would use for your face versus your body, or is it the same
30
stuff
or
basically?
Higher. Really, I mean, most people want something more cosmetically elegant for the face than they do for the body. And thankfully, there's a million different formulations for sunscreen. But if you want to use, you know, zinc oxide paste on your face and all over your body, you can totally do that. And that's fine with me.
Right. That's good to know. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, I'm never quite sure whether I'm doing myself good or not when it comes to these things.
Just use it. That's all I can say. If you use it, I'll be happy.
It seems like it's such a simple one, but... You know, I feel like I get stuck in that and then think, well, I this feels like too much for my face, or I need to have more on for my face, whatever the case is.
I mean, I think a lot of people pay more attention to their faces just, you know, because of cosmetic reasons and the hands, and they do get more sun exposure than the rest of us.
Yeah.
So at the very minimum, you want to get stuff on your face and hands every day.
So are there any like specific skincare regimens you suggest to people, considering that our face and our hands are the one thing that we kind of, and the décolleté or how
yeah,
do you say
the
it? those are the areas where most people want to make sure that they're probably doing a little extra care. Is there anything that you suggest for that?
I mean, again, it depends on your skin and, you know, your history, and your age. A lot of people are looking for ways to prevent premature aging, and there's a lot of different ways to do that. Sun protection is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah,
you know, on top of that, really good moisturizer. Moisturizer is trapping water in your skin. You will look more youthful if you're more hydrated.
Yeah.
Retinols can help. They help with cell turnover. They help prevent DNA damage in the skin. They help build up collagen in the skin. Not everybody can tolerate retinols because they're drying to the skin.
Right.
And I often recommend antioxidants, topical antioxidants as well.
Okay.
Again, depending on if your skin gets irritated or not with some of those products. And there's other things one can do too, but I would say those are the three things I most commonly recommend.
What about cleaning the skin, like regularity as far as morning and evening? Because I just did an episode not too long ago with someone who does holistic dentistry work, and was sort of surprised to learn that a lot of what we're doing is sort of stripping away some natural, you know.
Correct, absolutely.
Is it similar with the skin?
I usually tell people no more than twice a day. I have a lot of people coming in sort of obsessed with face washing, and, you know, they bring wipes everywhere and they're really stripping their skin and making it look worse than it needs to.
Right.
Twice a day is more than adequate for washing.
And there's a good layer of probably some sort of helpful bacteria that is doing something
Correct.
For cell turnover and actually.
Absolutely. And, you know, at some point there's no return. No good return for all of that work.
Right.
So be nice to your face. I always tell people, you know, I don't like the scrubs and the beads and you gentle hypoallergenic cleanser twice a day, moisturizer, you're good to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about blackheads? That's one of the things my son has had a lot of questions about. So
yeah, blackheads. I mean, we all have them.
Right.
You know, there are pores that sort of get filled with keratin that gets oxidized, that confers the black color to the skin.
Okay.
You know, washing your face, and then topical retinoids are probably the most helpful for blackheads and whiteheads. And, you know, there's tricks to using it so that you can tolerate retinoids. They're very drying to the skin potentially, but they work nicely to help clear out those pores. You know, we can also do chemical peels for those things, but they're part of our normal anatomy a little bit too.
Yeah. Are there any products? I mean, obviously you guys sell products, but for people who are buying sort of over-the-counter stuff, is there anything that you are a little leery of people using, or are there any known things that are just sort of bad for the skin that could contribute to more breakouts or to drying or whatever?
I really am having an issue with essential oils for the skin. I mean, people love their essential oils, and I get it, but you know, they clog pores if you're using them on your face, and we see a lot of allergy.
Which ones?
I mean, I would say a lot of people come in using like a rosehip oil. That's probably the most common acne one that I see.
Hmm.
Tea tree oil I'm okay with, actually.
Okay. Yeah. It's kind of astringent, isn't it? Or
it has some anti-inflammatory properties.
It does, okay.
So, but generally speaking, like lavender oil, I can't even name off the top of my head what some folks are buying. And then I see a lot of not just acne related to that, but more commonly contact dermatitis from it. People are really allergic to these things.
Yeah.
And even things that they, you know, they're like, well, I've been using this for 10 years. Well, you can develop allergy to something even if you have been using it for 10 years.
Right.
And people really hold on tight to those oils. so that's all I can say.
And they smell nice. And
they
so
smell lovely. They really do.
And they're in so many different products,
They're in everything. They really are. So I just don't like them as a skincare treatment.
So put them in like an air diffuser.
Well, even with the air diffusers, you can get an airborne contact.
Yeah, I suppose.
We see a lot of it. That's all I can say.
Is that right?
Yeah, we really do.
How much do we, I mean, I know like, don't we absorb like 80% of what gets put on our skin or some percentage?
Maybe? I'm sure, I don't know the percentage. We absorb, skin, that's where everything gets, our skin and our GI tract, how everything gets through.
Yeah.
80%?
Yes. I thought that's what I heard at some point, but airborne too, just environmental toxins and stuff actually get in too.
They do. And that's why, you know, for anti-aging purposes, we recommend the topical antioxidants because they're going to prevent that sort of environmental damage from changing the DNA in your skin.
Yeah.
And you can't just take a lot of vitamin C and vitamin E, you'll pee it out.
Right.
So it's nice to have these formulations that get to where they need to go to prevent those things from happening.
Are there any, as far as anti-aging is concerned, and I feel like, you know, Minnesota is probably not as big of a place for this. I'm sure if you lived out on the West Coast, it'd be a whole different, you'd be in a different practice.
It's bigger than you think, though.
I'm sure, but you know, do you try to, you know, coach that whole process to make sure that people don't really overdo things?
Absolutely. I mean, our practice, I think, very intentionally and very specifically, we really want people to look natural.
Yeah.
We don't want really people to say, oh my God, I look so different than I did. I want them to think they look better and they feel good about it, but I don't want their friends and family to notice that they had anything done, if that makes sense. So I think the approach to it is really to dial it down and just be conservative about it.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you can't do things, but you know, I have patients that come in with already enormous lips, for example, from an outside provider.
Gotcha.
And then they want more lip filler. And I've said no, for sure.
Yeah.
Nope, we got to let that dissolve for 6 months and then come on back and we can try it again. Or I'll sometimes dissolve it.
Is that right?
Yeah. So our practice, we're very focused on making people look natural and normal. And we do a lot of cosmetic work. I think about 30% of what I do is cosmetic.
Yeah.
But I think we just have a more conservative approach to it.
And what's the percentage of, I'm just curious about men to women as far as...
For cosmetics? More men than you'd think, but the majority, wondering. I mean, I'd say 80-20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
And are there any things that you would say that are like invasive but minimally that you recommend to people if they're feeling, you know, whatever, you know, overly crinkly or...
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things. One thing that I've really liked to do over the last 5-6 years is a procedure called microneedling, which can it can treat a lot of things. It helps with pore size, helps with fine lines and wrinkles, scars, and it's also a means to be able to deliver medication and other things into the skin so it can penetrate better. It involves taking these little tiny oscillating needles and driving either growth factors that stimulate collagen production or hyaluronic acid, which stimulates moisture, or medication into the skin better.
Okay.
And there's really minimal downtime with it. It's about a day of being pink. And people love it. I really, really like it for acne scars. It's been a game changer for us in dermatology.
Right?
Yes. It's really great.
Because before that, you would just try peels or something, right?
Peels and, ablative lasers. And I'm not saying there's not a place for those things still. There are. And it's not 100% improvement with the microneedling, but we can make a dramatic difference for people. It's one of the better technologies that's been developed. And it's, who would think to take needles and oscillate them all over the skin? But they're just little micro channels that are created.
Is it single or is it like a whole section of needles?
It's about 11, 12 little teeny tiny needles that oscillate up and down.
I've seen those little rollers that you can do on the
skin. Similar to
which
that,
are
but these go
little,
a little deeper.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you can actually infuse the skin with something.
We can choose whatever we want. Most people will do, for anti-aging purposes, we'll put a little hyaluronic acid and some collagen stimulating growth factors into the skin with that. But sometimes we'll add in medication as well, or we'll do a chemical peel afterward as well to get the peel to penetrate a little bit better.
Yeah.
So it's a neat procedure.
And is there a way to keep the skin, with like, what is hyaluronic?
Hyaluronic acid.
Acid.
Our skin normally makes it.
Right.
It's kind of what causes, it's what retains our water. It leads to our plumpiness and little babies with their cherub skin.
Yeah.
We lose it with age and with time. And so if you can put it into the skin, either topically or with fillers, which is what most fillers are made of.
Okay.
They work to attract water to the skin to kind of plump it up and make it look more youthful.
And what about with lip fillers? Is that the same kind of material or
it should be the same kind of material. There's other materials out there
that
I don't generally use, but I typically always use hyaluronic acid to fill the lips. There's thinner and thicker versions of hyaluronic acid, so depending on the area of the face that I'm treating, I'll use a thinner one, for the lips or the area under the eyes, and a thicker one to create bigger volume out laterally in the face, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot to choose from right now, which is nice for us as dermatologists.
Are there any things that you just will not use in your practice? Is there anything that you know of that's sort of hard for us to process or
silicone?
Hard for the liver?
I mean, I wouldn't touch silicone. It stays forever.
but Botox is something that you
do a lot of Botox and similar toxins. I love it. I think it's a really nice way to minimally invasively, create a more youthful appearance to the skin, especially with frown wrinkles in the upper part of the face.
Yeah.
It's pretty magical.
Well, it's interesting because I work with people with chronic headaches and stuff, it's being used for that. So people will also target the places where they have the frown lines or the, and the interesting thing about this, and this gets back to my sort of nervous system stuff, is that There's an aspect of the way that we sort of pattern that, and once it gets locked in, it's actually really hard to release. And there's a lot of evidence that shows that people who basically get stuck with these frown lines also stay with, it's like a certain amount of compression on your, your cranials that makes you feel a certain way. And it actually starts to contribute. And that a lot of times when people have, the Botox done, it takes a few days, before it starts to kind of have an impact.
Correct.
But then for a few months, a lot of times it'll be this opportunity to reset. And I see that it works really well sort of in coordination with what I've been doing too.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And interestingly, I think, the longer patients do it, I think your muscles almost forget to contract in that crazy way that they do sometimes.
Yeah.
And so you need less over time sometimes.
Okay.
And the lines that are sort of set there at rest really do tend to soften the longer one does it.
And I tell people about this as far as just, trying to free up, some kind of chronic tightness issue or something too, is that the nervous system just loves patterns.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it really efficient, so we don't have to relearn to do things over and over again. And those all that forehead sort of pressure that happens with those.
I wake
those
up
muscles.
With I wake up squinting
or jaw stuff.
Jaw clenching. I personally have, had the big 11 lines or have had them since I was a kid. I remember having a seventh grade teacher that told me if I kept frowning, I would have really big lines as a grown up. anyway, she's alive and well, and I told her about it and what I do now. anyway, it makes a nice difference.
So what is your program? What do you do for yourself?
What do I do?
Yeah.
As far as procedures, the things I've had done are Botox, and I've definitely had some filler done.
Okay.
To my I don't do it to myself. Yeah. But I have my partner do it for me. And I've done some laser procedures to get rid of brown spots.
Okay.
That's about it for me.
Yeah. What is that procedure? What do you do with there? I mean, some people do it for like age spots and things, right?
Yeah. We have a couple options for those. We have one laser that, you know, if you have one or two little brown spots that bother you, we can just hit one or two spots and get rid of them. A lot of people, the majority of people have, you know, yes, they have one or two spots, but they probably have a lot of background sun damage beyond that.
Yeah.
And so we'll try to do more of a full face procedure. Most often I do them in the fall and winter again, because you don't want to have a lot of sun exposure after you're doing these kind of things. It's a laser called Fraxel, and it does a beautiful job getting rid of kind of all of the background dispigmentation in the skin.
How does it get rid of it?
It targets melanin pigment in the skin. Okay. So it just sees the pigment, and it kind of destroys carbon dioxide and water bonds in the skin, and you just kind of shed and peel. It's lovely.
And do people do it for like birthmarks that are sort of?
Not for birthmarks. Okay. We have other lasers for vascular birthmarks.
Okay.
Generally, we don't treat pigmented birthmarks with lasers, but there are some vascular birthmarks that we will treat with a different type of laser.
Because I see, you know, because I treat babies, I see a few babies who come through with like some pretty serious ones. And a lot of times they will fade, you know, over time. You get the strawberry meningiomas and things. And you can sort of see it in there, because I've gotten to treat a lot of these little ones until they're like teenagers now. I've seen just the way that it sort of fades over
time.
They
involute, yes.
But there are certain ones that actually just do not change.
Sure. And even those ones that involute, depending on the anatomical location, like, for example, the eyelid or the nose or the lips, we often, even though they go away on their own, we do recommend treating them, because the skin malformations and things that can happen as a result can be pretty gnarly.
Are they more sensitive to sun if they have something like that?
No.
Okay.
No. But usually I'll refer those, you know, they're little babies, and you got to treat them when they're, before they start to get, you know, they start out small, they get big, and then they get small. If you treat them in that very first phase, it's the ideal time to do it. And I'll usually send those kids over to the university for some laser treatment, and they're kind of knocked out for it.
Okay.
And it's important to do.
Well, this is fascinating.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. I'm telling you, dermatology is really fun.
Yeah. So I'll plug Market Street Dermatology. It's in the...
International
Market Square. Yeah. I actually had my prom there, which is really funny.
A lot of patients will say, I've been to a wedding here. I had my graduation party here. Yes, for sure.
You have some information up on your site too, I noticed, with, you know, for you just, if you're just trying to kind of get a sense of what kinds of things you can do for different conditions.
We do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
And we are updating our website. I gave you a new headshot. We are trying to update our website. I think we haven't updated it in a little while.
Okay, so. I like it. I feel like it was really easy to find information on there. Okay. So for anyone,
we want it to be really simple. It won't be any more complicated. It'll just look a little different.
And I'll throw it up in the show notes here for anyone who's listening. Okay. And it'll be on the website as well.
So. Great, thank you.
Thanks for doing this with me. This is great.
It's already over?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that went by fast. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dr. Elise Schuer, folks. You may have heard that our skin is the largest organ in our body. It's important to find yourself a good dermatologist, because not only can they treat what comes up, they can also glean a lot of information by looking at it. And as Elise shared here, a good dermatologist will have referrals for you if they suspect there's more going on from what they notice on the surface, so that you get the proper care needed. We covered a lot here, but if you still have questions, feel free to reach out to me on our contact page at highway2.health. That's highway2.health. Elise said she's happy to answer any follow-ups and possibly come on again to cover something more thoroughly if you request it. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet. Be well, my friends.
If you enjoyed podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Medicine in America, hosted by Anthony Manson and Todd Harrington, shares the stories of physicians, other healthcare professionals, and industry leaders who are changing the way we deliver care. There's an episode that you should check out called Primary Care Reimagined with Subscription-Based Preventative Care Model. It's an inspiring call for a paradigm shift in primary care. All of their episodes highlight innovative ideas at the forefront of the movement to transform our healthcare system. Check out Medicine in America on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.